It's WrestlePod, the Troopany Show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello! Hello! And welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany, and this is my show. And I am joined today by my very good friends, Alex Watt and Chelsea Spollen, to discuss New Japan Pro Wrestling in this season of change. But before that, a word from our sponsor.
WrestlePlus.com is the brand new home of incredible online wrestling content, featuring uncensored shoot interview classics, full series of WrestleTalk TV and British Wrestling Weekly, exclusive documentaries, British wrestling's biggest names before they were stars, an incredible podcast collection, up to 90% off merchandise offers, and the brand new Power Slammed e-magazine forwarded by Finn Martin himself. WrestlePlus has thousands of hours of content with new and exclusive releases added regularly. You can join today for the stupidly low price of just £4.99 a month. Wrestle Plus, because this is wrestling.
Welcome back. We got a lot to discuss today, and we've just had a big, long conversation about British politics. So we're good.
What better way to get hyped for a New Japan talk than that?
And we're good and angry now, so we can take our way forward. We try not to. We avoid politics on the show so as much as we possibly can. Because the rest of my life is politics, so we try and avoid it. But today we had to get started with some stuff. And yes, I will welcome you properly now. Chelsea, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
Good, good. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm good. Good to be back. I was saying it's been like 2 months since I was last here to chat about Japan and such things.
Yes, but I'm sure we will have you back on something else very relatively soon.
I hope so.
We have got a lot of things to talk about today. We're kind of like covering, usually we tend to cover the big cards in New Japan Pro Wrestling and kind of catch up a few things, but there's been a couple of big cards and there's been a couple of big events in New Japan Pro Wrestling. The first of which was the Best of Super Juniors 2016, the 23rd iteration of that very tournament that has catapulted Will Ospreay into the stratosphere of professional wrestling stardom. So that kind of gives the results away if you haven't seen it already. But we're assuming, as it was 2 months ago, you probably heard about it by now.
How could you not, really?
Yeah. And the other one was Dominion 2016 from Osaka Joe Hall, which is one of the best named venues in the world in Sendai, Japan. So we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to start with the Best of Super Juniors. We haven't got time to talk about every match in the tournament because this podcast would be 3 hours long and very dull.
So probably be longer than 3 hours. Three days.
We'll get the big story out the way, which was Ricochet versus Will Ospreay in a match that was well received in most quarters except in Denver, Colorado, and one particular resident there.
Mr. It caused some buzz, it's fair to say.
Leon Vader White, I wrote an article about this on WrestleTalk.tv when it happened about a month and a half ago. If you're going to look in the old blog section there, my Sheriff of Parts Unknown column, and I kind of explained in that particular column that Vader shouldn't be angry because he was one of the guys that people said did far too much. And one of the guys that rearranged the business for big men, because the moment he hit a moonsault was the day everyone over 300 pounds had to try 10 times harder. So, you know, I think Vader was one of these guys who was changing the business when he was young, and I don't think he quite sees that himself. Yeah. What do you think, Alex?
Funnily enough, Seth Rollins said the same thing on a podcast recently.
Oh, there you
go. Wasn't this the dude who did a moonsault? Like, what is he on about? Like, it's fair to say that the match grabbed the attention, grabbed the headlines, like, which is a good thing in one sense, because it caused such a buzz that New Japan like actually released it free on YouTube for a bit, didn't they? Because so many people were talking about it. Like, yeah. I mean, My initial response, like, I really enjoyed the match. My initial response was like, why are people moaning? What did they think a match between those two would be? like they were going to, like, get on the mat and wrestle. Like, it's not... As soon as I saw Ospreay versus Ricochet, that is exactly what I expected them to do, was just try and one-up each other through increasingly nutty spots. It was quite glorious, I thought.
This is the thing, you know, this is it. And, you know, I look back at like people who I know have changed the business. And me and Chelsea talked about this on the Dream Slam podcast. There are people on that card who changed the business forever.
Mm.
You know, and you look back in to me in the '70s, people like the Royal Brothers, Vic Faulkner, was doing mind bogglingly cool stuff in a wrestling ring back in 1973.
Mm.
And the business didn't fall to a grinding halt just because he no sold a pile driver. You know, it's the business keeps moving on, and every once in a while, it shows how much it's moved on. You know,
to be fair, like William Regal said much the same thing, didn't he? After all the outcry, and was like, well, to be fair, like people were saying the same thing about guys like Rollerball Rocco back in the day, like back in the '80s. It's like, and you know, if you go and watch Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask from the '80s, like. You know, they were like breaking the mold then. Like the Joshy thing is a good one as well to bring up. Like, and you know what Liger was doing like back in the early '90s. It's like wrestling has to evolve. Like,
yeah, you know, and from the moment Mondo Guerrero invented the moonsault in what 1968 or whenever it was, you know, you're gonna get progression. It's gonna go forward. What's your thoughts on this, Chelsea?
So, I mean, I totally concur with what Alex said about what did they think that match was going to be like. you know, I saw those two were having a match, and I was like, oh man, they're going to do some cool flippy stuff. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. I really enjoyed the match. Yeah, it was kind of silly, but I don't think that detracted from my ability to enjoy it. I mean, I think there tends to be this attitude sometimes that wrestling has to be very, very serious storytelling all the time, or else it's not really wrestling. And it's so ridiculous. you know, I mean, wrestling is supposed to be fun, first of all. Like, it's not the mezzanine section at La Scala. It's pro wrestling. And it's supposed to be something where, again, people are like allowed to push the envelope, like you said.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that those guys are doing stuff that, I mean, those two guys are two of the best at the specific genre that they do. So, of course, they were going to do it up when they did it together.
Yeah.
You know, segments that they like may have rehearsed beforehand to get absolutely perfect. That doesn't bother me. You know, I could see how maybe somebody who wrestled professionally for a living for decades could have a hard time watching stuff like that, because maybe that takes them out of their ability to feel like they're emotionally invested in the story of the match. But I feel like you risk that with anything, even if it's not something, you know, that's got like super crazy gymnastics in it.
Yeah.
Because most of those matches, I mean, most matches in general probably have some stuff in them that's worked out beforehand between the two guys that do it, and some stuff that is just like off the cuff, and that's how it happens. I don't know. I wonder actually how much of Vader's objection to it was a work, because I mean, now he and Ospreay are gonna have a match.
Yeah, yeah.
PCW, how you troll us so.
I mean, that's gonna be fun. You know, that's gonna be fun.
It is. I don't know. Don't knock on PCW. Chelsea, you might not be familiar with PCW, are you?
I mean, I've heard of them. I don't know anything
about them. PCW are a British wrestling company that tend to rely on imports, though they've done that less and less as the British scene has developed. And to be fair to them, they're one of the companies that brought the standards of the British wrestling scene up, which is the reason why Will Ospreay is in Japan in the first place. But they do have a tendency, comedically have a tendency to rely on imports to the detriment of other people a lot of the time. They get a lot of negative stuff in the industry because of that as well. But this is the ideal show for them. You know, and I don't wish to detract from PCW's ability to put on a show with two guys who have a beef and make it into something very special indeed.
Right.
And you know, obviously they were the ones that played out the AJ Styles Lionheart feud last year. So they know what they're doing when they're coming to do things like this. And to be honest with you, having watched Vader go 8 minutes with Bram on TNA earlier in the year, I think he's going to actually be a fairly interesting match to watch. And I'd be interested and intrigued to see actually what happens, because, you know, Bram's no slow coach, and Leon wasn't slowing down for him. He's still hitting people incredibly hard, which is what Leon does.
Kind of his thing.
Yeah, kind of what he does, yeah.
In my mind, I tried to picture what Vader versus Osprey would be like, and I'm picturing this very, like, David and Goliath dynamic, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
To me, it seems like it would work really well, actually. Like, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, man, those two guys are both good enough that they're gonna put on a show. They're going to find a way to make it
and
something special.
It is an interesting point. Of the 9 world championships Vader won around the world on 3 different continents, which no one, not even Ric Flair, has done, one of them was the UWA World Heavyweight Championship from Mexico. So he is actually well-versed in Lucha Libre and would actually probably not be a bad match for Ospreay in his day. So it could be an interesting thing. It could be interesting to see how it happens. Funny enough, UWA were often detracted in Mexico for relying on big North American stars rather than building their own people, which is one of the reasons why the company doesn't exist anymore. But there you go.
Bringing it full circle.
Bringing it full circle. And yes, Alex.
So I just want to say, sorry, on that, like, I don't think Vader's reaction was a work. What I think is that he saw, like, the two GIFs that were doing the rounds and just judged the match on that. I'm not convinced he'd seen the full match when he was making those comments, because the stuff about, like, you can level some stuff at Osprey. Selling isn't really one of them. Like, he sells. He sells, like, a lot. Like, too
He's
much.
A good storyteller.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he understands how to work the crowd and stuff. And,
I think it... Go on.
I had a different point I was going to make. So.
I was going to say that from the selling point of view, it doesn't help that he still looks about 12 years old.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he's so baby-faced.
Yeah, that baby-face does make everything 10 times more authentic looking. Sorry, carry on.
What I was going to say is that obviously it was, to pick up on what Chelsea was saying, of like, it was a spectacle, the match. Like, it was like a live-action movie rather than a wrestling match in many ways. But the thing... what you want from a wrestling match is to get a reaction from the crowd. And what, like, Japanese crowds are notoriously quiet and respectful. Like, watch that match and that crowd are losing their minds. Like, that I haven't seen a Japanese crowd, a New Japan crowd that loud since Okada Tanahashi at the start of the year. And you know how much history is behind that match that got them to be that loud. So
yeah,
I think you've got to say they've done something right. If you can get a "this is awesome" chant from a Japanese crowd, like, that's pretty special, I would say.
It is, it really is. And if you want an example of how that works backwards, I mean, we're going to talk about Dominion later, but the Sendai crowd at Dominion were very much a traditional Japanese crowd. And you know, they wouldn't have reacted to this match in this particular way. And a lot of the matches Art Dominion worked well because it was in Sendai. And if they'd been in Tokyo, they would have fallen to a dead audience. So it is interesting.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, certainly I think the main event would have been very, very different if that match was in Tokyo rather than in Sendai.
Is that because of where the wrestlers are from and which crowds are like their hometown crowds? Or is that just the culture of the audience?
Culture, bit of both. The hometown fans, you tend to get reactions from hometown guys, but equally... the Sendai fans are much more, they will react to what's put in front of them compared to the Tokyo fans, who are a bit smarter. Not to say the Sendai fans aren't smart, but the Tokyo fans know what they like.
They have a longer memory.
Yeah, which is the reason why Nakamura was always a fave, even when Nakamura was like the dastardliest of all dastardly heels in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Go to Tokyo and he was a hero.
Do you guys see that he had a match with Kevin Owens last night?
I heard about the Jericho match.
Tokyo.
Yeah, I heard the Jericho. Yeah, I can imagine that would have been. I imagine they had to put that on last.
and he had a match with Jericho.
Yeah,
also.
I heard about the match with Jericho. Yeah.
That I was looking around for fan footage I could find of it on Twitter, and I found a couple of clips. It was neat.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I the Jericho doing the pose with his foot on chest pinfall. I don't think he probably should have done that.
He really
lynched.
Shouldn't have. He couldn't do it all the way.
But yes, so the rest of the Best of Super Juniors, because actually that incident kind of overshadowed a pretty good tournament.
Very good tournament,
actually,
overall.
And looking at Block A, your winner was Reisuki Taguchi with 10 points, Matt Sydal with 10 points in second, Bushi with 8, Kyle O'Reilly with 8, Rocky Romero with 8, Kushida with 8, so that was all joint set 6th, and then finally David Finlay scoring his first win in Best of Super Juniors with 2 points, God bless him. Oh, David Finlay. He's become a hero of the Twitter fraternity, basically, because he talks to all of us.
The only person on the Wikipedia page for this event whose name I can't click on to get a link to his page.
Yeah.
Why is that?
No one's done it yet.
He's very, very young. He was a last-minute addition, wasn't he? Because Matt and Nick, the Young Bucks, both pulled out with injuries.
Oh.
I think he got thrown in last minute.
Yeah, and that's why Chase Owens was in there as well.
Yes, that's the other guy. Yeah.
But they managed to build a feud out of it because David Finlay continued his feud with Jay White as the Young Boys feud at the G1 at the Best of Super Juniors final, and had a very good match there, to be honest. Though Jay White and David Finlay have wrestled each other 1,400 times in the last 6 months, but they get better every time, and they're getting a big crowd response. And David's a good lad. He knows what he's doing, and he's kind of taking his dad's kind of mantle and moved it forward, and which is what his dad did, and it's really what the Finlays do. Fourth generation wrestler, David Finlay. There you go. And the boss, Geddo, finished dead last in Block A with 2 points as well. So, you know.
can't accuse him of putting himself over.
Definitely not. But he has the manliest of all manly beards in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah.
And in Block B was won by Will Ospreay, who tied with Bobby Fish, Ricochet, and Volador Jr. Jushin Thunder Liger still cracking away. I think this was about his 23rd. I'm not sure he's wrestled in every one, because I know he had a couple of years off through major injuries. The brain tumor certainly held him up for a year, and I think the shattered ankle held him up for 2 years. So Tiger Mask 4 was down there as well. Chase Owens with a big win over Ricochet, with a bit of help from Bullet Club. Well, all right, a lot of help from Bullet Club. And Trent Barretta finished, interesting. Everyone finished either first or eighth.
Yeah, that block was very well booked, I thought, because it got to the last day and about four people could have won it. And it was basically Ospreay was like the least likely to win it. So that I think they did it where it was just upsets all night. And Ospreay was like the ultimate underdog winner.
Because
he lost like his first two or three matches in the tournament as well. And had to like, they really know what they're doing with Ospreay. That much is clear.
Yeah. So then they went to the Best of Super Junior finals, which was headlined by Ricochet. Sorry, not Ricochet. Headlined by Ryosuke Taguchi and Will Ospreay. And there was a lot of talk in that final match about Taguchi dropping the comedy to getting serious. There was still bits of the Taguchi.
He didn't drop it completely.
No, he kept it in there because that's his character, and you know
he did a couple of those taunts that were like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
you know.
But he laid in a match that I haven't seen him do since. He's been capable of it, but never had the opportunity. This was a far better matches than he had with Kenny Omega last year, and certainly as good as the matches he had with Prince Devitt on Devitt's departure. In 2015.
That was him that had the last match before he left for NXT?
Yeah. Do you know?
I forgot that. I didn't put that together that it was the same guy. I've seen that match. It was awesome.
That's it. The Taguchi of Apollo 55, the tag team with Devitt, and the Taguchi of now are essentially two different people. You know, Taguchi had a big time off after Apollo 55 broke up. He had an injury. Took nearly a year off, came back to feud with Devitt on the Devitt Loser Leave Town feud, and was after that was just completely a different guy, really, compared to what he is now in his previous incarnation. And it certainly had a cracking match with Ospreay. It was the kind of thing that the Ospreay needed to gain some momentum and to gain a sense of positivity towards his championship win. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I agree. And Taguchi has had a good tournament overall as well, because he had a cracking match with Kushida as well. So it felt like it was resurgence might not be the right word, but you know what I mean. Like, he definitely went all out. It felt like to have great matches. And yeah, Ospreay feels a bit like a made man. 23, which is just mental as well. Every time I think, it's like, this guy's 23 and he's like that high up in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Well, every time I see him, I imagine this conversation that when the conversation him and Dixie Carter must have had when he told her, "Yeah, I've got some bookings for New Japan Pro Wrestling, so I won't be able to sign with you full time." And I can imagine just Dixie Carter going, well, you'll never work for us again.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, well, he doesn't really need to, does he? Yeah, anyway, yeah.
Probably be all right.
You know WWE is going to come for him at some point.
Well,
they'll probably wait a couple of years.
I think that's the big conversation we have next in wrestling in general. There has to come a point where some people are going to say, not bothered. I don't want to. You know, I'm damn sure some have done it already. Mm. They probably won't be public about it because they may want that option in the future. But I'm sure that we're getting to the point now, especially with like Cody Rhodes leaving at the top of his money earning potential, not on the top of his creative potential, but certainly probably as much money as he's ever going to earn in pro wrestling, he will have made in the last 2 years, and he's walked away from it.
Yep.
I think that's going to be where the actual next wrestling boom comes from. Isn't going to be WWE. It's going to be people walking away from WWE.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's a conversation for a different day, which I think I probably will have with my next guest on the True Penny Show. But anyway, what did you think, Chelsea, this final? As our New Japan newbie who's learning as she goes, what did you think of it?
I loved it. I felt like something I hadn't seen as much from Ospreay yet, because I haven't watched as many of his matches, was... I hadn't seen him have a match like this where the storytelling was so emotional and so dramatic. You know what I mean? Where there were so many like false finishes to the match where it's like, oh no, somebody kicked out right before three.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen him have a match like that. And so seeing it was just really refreshing because I feel like he proved that he has that club in his bag, which, I mean, maybe he didn't need to prove that to people who aren't as new to it as I am. But for me, I feel like I needed to see that after all this so-called controversy of whether or not he and Ricochet had, like, you know, ruined wrestling somehow by doing it. And I felt like it was such a generous performance from Taguchi, you know, because he put so much emotion into it, and it was very serious. You know, you got invested in both of them watching it. And honestly, for me, I mean, I was sort of rooting for Ospreay, I guess, just because he's adorable and he's great. But Taguchi he showed so much heart, you know, like he really fought through it like a warrior, you know, and in a good guy way. I really enjoyed it. I thought the dynamic between the two of them was great. I thought the mat wrestling was great. I thought the whole thing with the ring psychology of Ospreay, like having the injured leg and having to, you know, and then of course he still pulls off random flippy things on the way to the ground.
I like the slingshot off one leg. That worked well for me.
Oh my God.
That was good. And that's the kind of thing
hell?
You should do more of. Yeah. If you're capable
like,
of doing
that
shit, then do
possible?
It. But yeah, no, it was good stuff. Alex, you've watched more of the tournament than we have. So what are your picks for people to go have a look on New Japan World for?
Kyle O'Reilly against Kushida from the first night was the rematch and was, as you would imagine, bloody great. yeah, Kushida and Taguchi was very good. Kyle O'Reilly, Matt Sydal was very good. And most of Ricochet and Ospreay's matches were fun against other people. I mean, obviously, if you haven't seen Ricochet versus Ospreay, what is wrong with you? Go watch it.
I've been busy.
if you haven't been convinced by the fact that everyone is talking about it at this point. But yeah, there was, I mean, even like, you know, like Gedo had a great tournament, like was having great matches with everyone. It was just very like, overall a really well booked tournament and everyone seemed to be on top of their game. But yeah, if you have to check out one, check out Kyle O'Reilly and Kushida, definitely.
Cool. Yeah, I think we'll get, when we talked about Dominion, which we'll start on in a second, I think Kyle O'Reilly has grown, that's no offense to Bobby Fish because I think he has as well, but they have grown into their role as regular army badasses. You know, they aren't faces, they aren't heels really, but they have this. It's the role that Akira Maeda used to have 20, 30 years ago. You know, it's just going to beat you up kind of role, which is really important to New Japan's kind of aesthetic. And though they spend more time in Ring of Honor than they do in New Japan, it certainly gives them that boost, certainly that realism boost. So let us move on then to Dominion 6.19 in Osaka Joe Hall, which is in Sendai, Tokyo, Japan. Sorry, it's Sendai, Japan, not Tokyo, because nowhere near Tokyo. Sendai, Japan, which was opened with a trios match, which was Daisan Sendai Trio, which is the third generation, Hiroshi Tanzan, Manubi Nakanishi, and Satoshi Kojima, against the Dojo Boys of David Finlay, Jay White, and Juice Robinson in 7 minutes and 53. A good, fun... what I thought was really hilarious was the first 3 minutes where Juice Robinson and Jay White just kind of, they kind of cornered Kojima, and Finlay just threw with the kitchen sink at Kojima for about 3 minutes while they tried to fend everybody else off, just trying to get the quick pinfall so they didn't have to wrestle everybody else. And they were just like, oh, and they didn't do it. But it was like, I thought it was fun psychology. It's like, pick the smallest guy, try and corner him, beat the hell out of him, and if it doesn't work, then we'll have to think of something else. Which I thought was really fun and different way to open the show rather than what we're used to, which is, as we've complained about before, get your shit in matches. Next, we moved on to Bad Luck Fale Hangman Page, which is Adam Page's new character in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And it is like, it's such a change from like the not clean cut heel suit wearing Adam Page of Ring of Honor and PWG fame, with Yujihiro Takahashi, who is girlless these days and has seemed to have taken on a new serious trait. And they defeated Hunter Club of Captain New Japan, Yoshitatsu, and Togi Makabe, who's not in Hunter Club because he's GBH. And that match was all right. Did what it said on the tin. Takahashi and Page are setting something up for later in the day, though. And yeah. I hate to say this, but I kind of miss Takahashi without the sleazy stripper accompaniment, really. It sounds very sexist of me to say so, but he had a certain swagger about him in those days. And I'm not saying he's lost it yet, but he seems to have got more serious. I don't know. Yeah,
why have they done that? Do we know?
No, don't know. Costing him more money, I suppose.
Wait, they made him more like a stripper or less like a stripper?
No. No, they had for a long time, his gimmick is Tokyo Pimp, okay?
Right.
So he had scantily clad female assistants wherever he went, the most famous of which was when he was never open weight champion, and his assistant was a lady called Mao. Okay. And she was the most enthusiastically she was just massively enthusiastic, loved being out there. You could tell she was really enjoying herself. And she brought a real edge to what he was doing. And she wasn't running interference or anything. She was just nice girl in PVC swimsuit who was stood there next to her. But
She was a valet.
She was a proper valet. She was doing the job properly. And then she just didn't get rehired after one show. And everybody was like, oh, that's a real shame because she were really, really good. And since then, he's just like, the less girls he's had with him, the further down the card he's gone. So yeah, it's just kind of slightly disappointing, and it sounds really sexist because it's like I shouldn't be encouraging this kind of behavior in modern wrestling, but it just worked for him and it worked for his character. So,
well, I mean, you shouldn't be encouraging this kind of behavior. Like, there's sexist presentation and there's sexist presentation. Is it kind of sexist that the only way that a woman is going to be in that particular valet position in most promotions is that she's going to wear like a polyvinyl bikini? Yeah, kind of. But if she's getting paid a lot of money to do it and is a valuable like contribution to the product, then it can read as, you know, she's just like cheap fodder for the male gaze of the fans, or it can read as she's a valuable contribution to the product and is enhancing the product by being there.
I would,
and not just with her sexuality, but also with her attitude and her character.
Yeah, I would go with the second thing. You know, she is a big wrestling fan. You know, I follow her on Twitter, and she's posting about wrestling all the time. She loves the fact she was a member of Bullet Club, and you know, she, like how many.
I mean, who wouldn't be happy? About
yeah,
that?
How many wrestlers in the world would kill to be in Bullet Club? And she was, you know. So anyway, they're building for something for later in the show. Anyway, moving on though, Chaos, Tomohiro Ishii and Yoshihashi defeated Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi and Sanada, 7 minutes and 51 in a match that was pretty good. It really sets up kind of like Sanada and Ishii as the next singles feud for Chaos and Los Ignorables. So, which should be interesting because Sanada, you talk about a switch in characters compared to what Sonata was 6 months ago. And this is Dead Eyes killer Sonata these days. And completely different moveset. He's bulked up. His face is basically expressionless. He's psychopathic in his approach. And he's just the guy Ishii could have a lot of fun with, I think, over a 20-minute semi-main event for the Ring of Honor TV Championship. But that's my kind of way of thinking about it. I don't know how you guys feel about that. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I agree. Ishii doesn't have the TV Championship.
Oh, he doesn't
anymore,
at the moment.
Though,
yes, yeah.
Bobby Fish won it off him. But yeah, I think Sonata's been awesome. Like, I think, the whole of... I still can't say the name. Los Ignorables
de Japón.
Those guys.
Yes.
Yeah, the coolest faction in wrestling. they're all like Bushi, Sonata, Evil as well. They're all like playing their roles so well. This kind of leads into the next match, Goto against Evil. Like, it's strange that they were losing the matches. I don't know what you think on those terms, like the booking style. It seemed to be like sort of setting up the main event, like, as maybe like a...
put you off the... Put you off the scent.
Misdirection.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't. So it's very... Yeah, it seemed like an odd booking decision to have them all lose, but...
They had a six-man match at the Best of Super Juniors final, and that was exceptionally good. It wasn't just a get your shit in match. It was really well done, and it set these matches up perfectly, especially Goto and Evil, because Goto and Ishii were working super smooth as a tag team with Yoshihashi. They are really, really good, you know. And Los Ignorables are starting to really click as a unit, as a wrestling unit, in-ring wrestling unit, really well as well. So they're pulling some matches out that are steadily getting better, and I hope this feud doesn't end as a faction-on-faction feud. I think it would be... And it's not like, you know, the faction-on-faction feuds we have last year, which was Tori Yano versus Bullet Club, which, you know, Tori Yano's never going to win. But, you know, it's been really well done and really well organized. I really like it at the moment. And, you know, you feel like they're actually fighting for the soul of the company, you know, and it lays into the story that's been told since. Essentially, it's layered into the story since Nakamura left. Chaos has had to pull themselves back together again with two hands, and Okada's the leader now, and he's had to take that role on board. And was that a distraction? Is that why he lost the championship? And he's pulled in these people, Osprey, because Chaos have never had a really great singles junior heavyweight, and he pulls in Goto to replace Nakamura in the heavyweight division. And now Chaos are clicking on all cylinders, and we can go after these guys. You know, it tells that story so well. You know, it's essentially, you know, we've got to round up the posse and go after the Hendersons. You know, it's that kind of Wild Western storytelling.
Has anybody been as dominant as the Bullet Club since the Bullet Club became a thing? Like any other faction?
I guess Chaos in its early days, I would guess.
But overall, Bullet Club is kind of like the gold standard, right? I mean,
you could say that, really. I mean, they Bullet Club have, you know, they're taking the shine off a little bit at the moment because they're not in the main event scene, and I'm sure they will be in a given time. I think the Bullet Club has to reinvent itself, whereas the native factions don't, if you see what I mean. GBH has been around for, what, since 2005 or something like that. It's a ridiculous amount of time. And they just keep doing what they keep doing, and they're of a value. There's only two of them left now. But they are of a value as they are. They don't really have to change anything. And Chaos doesn't have to reinvent itself so long as those stars stay there. Whereas the Gaijins, because you are always going to get a cycle of Gaijins, even if they are native Gaijins, because even like Carl Anderson and Prince Devitt, who are native New Japan guys who grew up in the New Japan dojo, don't wrestle for New Japan anymore. So they're always likely to leave. So, and it's also uncharted territory because they're the first proper Gaijin faction in of any distance of time in Japanese wrestling entirely. So, yeah, you know, there was always a rough accumulation of Gaijins, as in the very first, we were talking about this last year, the very first predecessor to the G1 Climax tournament had two brackets, which was natives and Gaijins. So, you know, Bullet Club have been the gold standard, you're right, in terms of if you look at their title list and compare it to everybody else's, they have probably won as many championships as Chaos has, but Chaos has had 10 years to do it and Bullet Club have had two.
I mean, I don't even think you have to go as far as looking at the titles that they have if you just look at the popularity that they have. I mean, there are people that literally don't watch New Japan Pro ever.
Yeah.
That know what Bullet Club is and follow Bullet Club and have a, like, you know, just in the sense of, like, they like the Young Bucks, and whenever the Young Bucks are there, they're excited about it. I don't know. I feel like that brand has transcended New Japan Pro as a brand.
Definitely it has. And I think also there's the, obviously being Gaijin, they're wrestling outside the company all the time. So that gives depth.
Yeah.
You know, you see people at wrestling shows in the UK wearing Bullet Club t-shirts, and wrestling people at wrestling shows in Germany as well as North America. The Ring of Honor thing helps because Bullet Club are kind of faces in Ring of Honor and Shikara and North America when they wrestle there, so there's that depth. And also because they're English speakers, they cut their promos in English, you know, that's a big deal,
right?
A bigger deal than you
think.
It
gets their eyes on the product.
Yeah, so it gets more eyes on the product, and Bullet Club do as many favors for New Japan as New Japan do for Bullet Club. So you know, it's a good to keep them at top of the card, but they have to look after the native market too.
Right.
So yes,
makes sense.
Yeah, I suppose they are. No one's done as much as Bullet Club as quickly as Bullet Club has done, and no one has done as much to emphasize how faction wrestling should work in this day and age. Because you can't. Japanese wrestling requires factions really not to exist, but certainly it helps if you've got factions in place. And certainly, you couldn't do this in a North American company. I don't think it would work.
I have more questions about that, but I don't know if you want to spend time on it.
Should we come back to that in a bit?
Sure.
Okay, well, you wanted to talk about Hirooki Goto and Evil. Alex, what did you think of this match?
It's good. I just think, like, yeah, the Evil is... I mean, it's so on the nose, the name, which always makes me laugh. But, yeah, he's like I say, with all of them, they're really coming in, into their own, and we're talking about factions there. Like, the hope is that Los Ignorables,
there you go,
Pan,
yeah,
getting close. But the hope is that they're gonna, like, be the new Bullet Club, I guess, like, and they can reach that kind of level. I mean, they've, you know, was Invasion Attack in Tokyo?
Yes.
Yeah, because they, like, Naito was so popular for that match. It was completely the other way around this time, where all those guys were getting booed, but, like, in Tokyo, they're, like, the cool heels now that people like, so...
Yeah.
It definitely feels like they're, you know, a big deal.
There is a Nakamura-sized hole in Tokyo's heart, though, isn't there?
There certainly is.
And someone has to fill that space. So,
I mean, if you see the video of the reception he got for that WWE show last night, like, holy crap, they were so excited for him. And you could tell he was a little, like... He's Nakamura. He's a game day player. You know, he's not going to be, like, too emotional during his entrance, but you could tell it was a little weird for him.
Yeah. It's like all conquering hero running for mayor of Tokyo, and he'd probably win. I like Goto and Evil. It was a good match. And Goto actually looks like he's doing something properly now. He's really kind of like, he looks so much more focused. He's clearly going to be a guy who's going to be at the second tier for another 2 or 3 years, but he looks like he's quite happy to be that guy now, whereas a year ago he didn't look that happy but had no idea how to fix it, whereas now
yeah,
he looks,
I mean,
like he could fix it.
It'd be interesting again to see, we'll chat a bit about the G1 in a bit, but
yeah,
how, because he had a very good tournament last year. It's like, are they gonna keep that going, or is it, like you say, are they gonna solidify him as an upper mid guy?
Yeah,
if that sounds
never
right.
Open weight Intercontinental Championship. We see the Intercontinental Championship isn't really, it's a main event title, isn't it? So yeah, it's more or less equal to the World Championship. This is the kind of matches they should be having, though. This is the kind of personal feud issues that they need to drive the stories for New Japan forward, and this has worked really, really well. Then we had a four-way tag team elimination match for the IW Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship, which had featured the Red... The Young Bucks wrestling Matt Sydal and Ricochet, Red Dragon, and Rapingi Vice. This was a scramble match, which meant that over-the-top rules also counted for elimination, which led to some top comedy in this particular match. And I think it was nowhere near as good as the four-way at Wrestle Kingdom, but it was entertaining for what it was. And I think it probably relied a lot on the fact that Matt and Nick Jackson were just coming back off injury and no one wanted to try that hard, but they still had to win the championship, so they had to.
Yeah. That's how, yeah, that's all right. And I understand why they did the over-the-top rope thing, but it felt a bit weird to me watching it.
If you've watched house shows for New Japan, that tends to be a standard house show deal. Like, you get faction matches like Bullet Club versus Chaos, 5-on-5, over-the-top rope eliminations count, so they can add something different, and it means people
it
get
protects,
protected.
It protects them as well from the pinfall. I get that. Like, it just felt a little bit... strange with the pacing and stuff, but they did well.
Here's a question for you, as far as, right, because we're still working on the principle that Ricochet hasn't signed for WWE yet.
I think I read something, if this adds a little bit of context to it, with Ricochet. Apparently, I think he's finished up with Lucha Underground at the end of season 3, but I think what I've read is that the terms of his contract, he can't sign for another promotion like WWE until that series is aired on TV.
Right.
Oh,
that would make more sense.
If that's true, that makes a lot more sense why it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and so, why he kept the championship, well, they won the championship back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think he's probably going to be sticking around in New Japan for a little bit, which will be nice, quite frankly.
Is it? So I'm primarily watch WWE, and I sort of don't want him to go to WWE because I don't really feel so. It's different for him to go to the main roster versus him going to NXT, right? Those are two very different things.
Mm.
But in NXT, a problem that they have right now, after they just did this Take Over the End special, is that the generation of NXT stars who made NXT into its own separate brand from the main roster and really distinguished it and made it a big deal have mostly gone up to the main roster, right? Very few of them are still there. I think Bayley is the last holdout that they have.
They've still got Balor, but he's gone.
They still got Balor, but I mean, come on. Like, they've still got Balor, but they're not really doing anything interesting with him right now. And they've got Bayley, but they're not really letting her have that many matches, which is really annoying. so they kind of are without a lot of the superstars that made that brand important. And they have these guys right now, you know, like, I mean, they have Samoa Joe, they have Austin Aries, they have these big names who are important to wrestling, but they haven't made them important to NXT yet. They haven't done an NXT thing with them to make them NXT guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when Finn Balor first came to NXT, people were excited about it, but it took a while for him to stop being the person they were excited about because of Prince Devitt, for them to get excited about him being Finn Balor.
Yeah.
It took some time. Mm. It takes time, and they haven't figured out how to do that yet. They're in this weird transitional space. And I feel like Ricochet, if he joined the product right now, would actually make that problem worse. And I don't know. I mean, like, he doesn't need it, you know? He's one of those independent guys who is going to get a really good paycheck and be able to do really cool stuff and have good feuds that are really interesting pretty much no matter where he goes. He doesn't need WWE right now. And I'm just, you know... I also don't want him on the main roster until after they've proven that the brand split is actually going to reduce the risk of injury somewhat, because I'm not convinced that wrestling 4 days a week is that much better than wrestling 6 days a week. And I don't know that I want to see somebody like Ricochet, who has this incredible move set, you know, that, I mean, like, on a level that he's one of those guys who's like one of the only guys who does the stuff that he does as well as he does it. I don't know that I want to see that guy burn himself out after a year or two on the main roster, where he'll inevitably get hurt and have to take some time off.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Which, and, you know, the cautionary tale here is Adrian Neville.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, like, it's interesting. You've coming at it from a slightly different angle than I thought you were, because I thought you were going to say, because Neville's the ultimate example where the stuff he does in WWE is insane, but it's like not even a patch on the stuff he was doing when he before he signed with them. Like, and Ricochet would be the same. He'd have to tone his style down.
So much.
The same with Ospreay if he ever signs in the future. Like, it's kind of, it takes the shine off them a little, like you say, because, like, you know, half of their appeal is that they do this crazy stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and the New Japan thing is, New Japan, like most Japanese companies, works on a principle of 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off.
So
they have time to recover.
They get vacations.
There's a reason those matches, main event matches, like main event, I'm saying, I mean like a card like this, which is, you know, one of their biggest cards of the year. It's like, there's a reason why all the top matches are so good, and that is a big part of it. Like, if you have weeks off and can recover, you can go that hard in the ring and do a match like that.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was one of the absolute downfalls of ECW, because the guys in ECW were wrestling that hard every night. It wasn't they weren't just doing it for a pay-per-view or a TV taping. They were doing it every night because, for some bizarre reason, well, we know why, they'd been sold on the fact that they had to work that hard all the time to keep their spot.
And they were also getting paid a lot less than the new Japan Pro Wrestling top stars are getting paid right now. A lot less.
And to give you a rough idea of, like, what I know of people who got paid what when, back in the 80s, and obviously you reapply this, adjust this for inflation. I know the British Bulldogs were, when they were working for All Japan Pro, they got $10,000 a tour plus $1,000 a night for 14 nights. So that's $24,000 each for 2 weeks' work. And, you know, All Japan would never pay that now, because All Japan's effectively in the toilet in comparison to business-wise. But you can get your rough idea of, if you're going to work that hard, we will reward you incredibly well for working that hard. You know, that's the principle behind Japanese wrestling. That's the way it works. We want the absolute best matches out of you. But we understand you're going to take 2 weeks off, because you're going to need 2 weeks off. You know. Anyway, moving on. But yes, that's an interesting and pertinent point, and one of the things that will play into all the conversations that we're having about pro wrestling at the moment. Yes. Anyway, Kushida defeated Will Ospreay for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship in 14 minutes and 36 seconds in a match that I feel wasn't necessarily quite as good as the first match they had, but I still think it was very, very good for a championship match. And I liked the fact that Ospreay opened up his armory a bit. There was a lot of Johnny Saint Vic Faulkner-esque apology in this particular match. And one thing I didn't mention, which was really f***ing cool, and I'm going to have to beat myself here, but it was that cool, was Steve Corino in the Best of Super Juniors final name-dropping Ligero and Alex Shane and a bunch of British wrestlers who worked incredibly hard. And I'd like to thank King Corino for his commentary there, because there's a bunch of guys in this country over the last 20 years have worked their asses off to make British wrestling this good. And people like Will Ospreay and Adrian Neville and even Grado are a product of the British wrestling scene, who are hitting it on all cylinders in federations across the world, whether it's aerial wrestling, comedy wrestling, you know, strong style or hardcore. British wrestling's doing exceptionally well, and I have absolutely no national pride, so if I'm saying that, you know it's happening and it's true.
But yeah, spot on.
So what do you think of this match, guys? Who'd like to go first on this one?
I mean, I really liked it. I was really excited to see the two of them have a rematch, because I really, really liked the first one. And like you said, it was nice to see Ospreay kind of diversify his approach a little bit. I feel like his debut, you know, there's a lot of pressure on a debut. You kind of have to show like what it is specifically that makes you special. And he didn't have to do that this time, because he's so over right now. Like, everybody knows what makes him special. So he got to just have a really good match. And I feel like his debut match, it was sort of like Kushida was basically like letting Ospreay show off, right? And highlighting things that Ospreay does well. Yeah. And I felt like this was more like Ospreay was coming to Kushida on Kushida's level a little bit and being like, all right, let's do stuff that makes both of us really, really, really look good. And, you know, I mentioned when we talked about it the first time that I could watch those two guys feud, and you asked me, like, could you watch them feud for 4 years? And I was like, maybe not. I kind of changed my mind. I kind of think I could.
Yeah, what did you think, Alex?
They're going to have many more matches, yet they have quite the chemistry in the ring.
They really do. You can tell how much they really like working with each other.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, this is essentially, this is the moment. Tiger Mask Dynamite, Liger and Black Tiger. It's this moment. We're getting that again. Mm. You know, there's two guys who come at the same thing from two different angles. Because Kushida isn't an aerialist, but he's so fast. And Ospreay isn't a ground guy, but he can do submissions. So it's such an interesting mix. And you've got two different wrestling cultures. And of course, New Japan junior heavyweights are at their best when you have a mix of wrestling cultures trying to go to the same thing from two different points, because the obvious one is Dynamite and Tiger Mask, a Japanese wrestler who learned Lucha Libre and applied it to Japanese wrestling, and the British wrestler who applied strong style to British wrestling. Put that and you have some of the greatest matches ever that still hold up to this day. And then, you know, you have Liger and Owen Hart. And you have Liger and Black Tiger, which was Eddie Guerrero at the time, Black Tiger 2. So you have that mix. You need that mix to drive this division forward. And because you've had a lot of natives for a long time, and now it's probably slightly too far mixed as far as Gaijin are concerned. But that's the way it is. If they can't find the stars, they're still making the best of what they've got.
Yeah. I don't know if you come at it from such an informed perspective that you were talking about. You know, how there's stuff that Ospreay does really well, but he also has like a couple of tricks in his bag that are on Kushida's level and vice versa. And, you know, the more I think about that, like, you know, they say styles make fights. And those guys, the two of them together, they can definitely go. And I that is one of the things I really like about New Japan Pro from what I've seen of it, is I feel like you have a much, much, much more diversified mix of styles and approaches than you get in a lot of other wrestling promotions.
Yes, I think I would agree with you. Are you any more commentary, Alex, on this one? Or?
I basically agree with what you guys said. Yeah. Yeah. Really good match. Yeah, I don't think it was quite as good as their first one, but yeah, hopefully they're going to wrestle a lot more. What do we think they're going to do with Ospreay now? That's the question. I was wondering if we... Can they get him a partner? Because I was thinking... I meant to mention this earlier when we were talking about the four-way match in the tag division, junior tag division, that it's getting a bit stale now. They need some more teams in there. Like,
well,
they could get a good partner,
isn't it?
For Ospreay. He'd be perfect to do that for a little bit, I think.
I just thought of one.
Go on.
Marty Scurll.
Oh, hello.
I'm going to need someone to explain to me why that.
Marty Scurll is biggest heel drawer in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Brilliant character wrestler who has had numerous changes in his career. He started off in a tag team with Paige's brother, Ricky, one of the Knight brothers. Not Ray, the other one. He does some really, really cool stuff. He was at Battle of Los Angeles last year. And he's probably the best heel we have, but he's very adaptable at what he does. He can do mat work. He can do aerial stuff. He was the first person, I think, to do, you know, the Generico dive through the buckles?
Yeah.
He was the first guy to do that in TNA when he was on British Boot Camp in TNA. I go find his stuff. Well worth watching. Yes, and that'd be interesting. That'd be nice. But if you're going for somebody who's already associated with New Japan Pro Wrestling, it's got to be somebody from Ring of Honor. It's got to be somebody from NOAH. And I can't really think of anyone who's a junior heavyweight who's free. You know, who has.
And obviously with the faction thing as well.
Yeah, you've kind of got someone who's got a rough association with Chaos from before or after, and the only people who are the Briscoe brothers, and they're not really associating with Chaos at the moment. So. Mm-hmm. And they aren't really junior heavyweights at the moment either. So I'd have to have a think about that. I don't really know of anyone because there's no one free unless Jay White makes his graduation from being a dojo boy, but he's got to go on his excursion first before he comes back, I would think.
Yeah, but Marty Scurll's a great shout. It'd be great if they could bring him in. I'm just thinking because Ospreay obviously has had
great year, but it's like he hasn't won the title, so then you know where do you put him next if you want to keep the momentum going?
And it depends, because they tend to put people together who have styles that match. So like Seidel and Ricochet match, right. The Young Bucks match, Fish and they like Red Dragon because they match. You know, so you've got to have somebody who's equally aerially adept, and there isn't that many people. Maybe somebody
there's
in CML.
There's not that many people on that level.
No, maybe somebody in Volador Jr. Maybe he's not doing anything. Yeah. You know, he's not doing anything. You'll do.
Is it that it works better when they match, or is it just that's the taste preference? Could they get somebody who's like a complete opposite of him?
That's Gedo and Jado's taste preference, because if you look at Gedo and Jado. In their tag careers, they were guys who were very, very similar, and it worked really, really well. But with them, it was about attitude of presentation, because they were just smash mouth offense. They weren't great aerialists. They were great map workers. They were brilliant brawlers. I haven't seen a junior heavyweight brawlers like them anywhere. They were awesome. They put the Briscoes to shame. So you know they were awesome, and that's kind of like, I think that's where they put their things together from. But like even Apollo 55, Taguchi and Devitt were very close in styles, and they were probably the best junior heavyweight tag team New Japan's ever had. So it's they do need some, if they were going to fight technically they'd need one, somebody for the next Best of Super Juniors tag team tournament anyway, won't they? So they'll find him somebody, I would guess. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they've got a young boy Dewback off of Excursion who could do some wonderful things.
Do people ever leave factions and join opposing factions, or is that not a thing?
That's a bit like Takahashi left, turned on Chaos. He turned on Toriyano to join Bullet Club.
But that's a big deal. It doesn't happen often.
Takahashi and Iizuka, who were the only two proper heels in Chaos, were turned to get rid of them out of Chaos. Iizuki went to Suzuki-gun because they're a proper heel team, because basically they kind of wanted Chaos. Okada's that good, he was starting to get face reactions, and Nakamura was that popular in Tokyo, and they do half their shows in Tokyo, so they couldn't really have them as heels. So it was like, well, let's just kind of turn them face, but not really, and we'll not tell anyone, and we'll get rid of these two. It was very clever how they did it, and they did it over the space of about 6 months, but Chaos are supposed to be heels, and they used to be the biggest of badass heels as well, you know, but they just grew to be popular because they were that good. So, you know, and Chaos is the elite. Chaos is the four horsemen, essentially. You know, except for Toriyano, who's just Toriyano, so he's all right. just cheats, and that's it. So Kushida and Will Ospreay. Just mentioning Toriyano, because it wouldn't be a New Japan Pro Wrestling podcast if we didn't mention Toriyano. Currently in Noah, tagging with Marufuchi and feuding with Killer Elite Squad over the GHC Tag Team Championships, I understand. And doing good things. Been given a break from New Japan.
An interesting partnership again.
They were Killer Elite Squad spent most of last year feuding with Colt Cabana and Chris Hero. So, which was absolutely cracking, by the way. If you like tag team wrestling, go look at that stuff, because that was ace. But yeah, and then Colt Cabana said it was a very important match in his career, because he never thought he'd have a long range feud with anyone ever again. You know, because he's always a night to night, town to town guy, and Jado liked him, and he wanted to put him in a long series, and they put him in a long series with Killer Elite Squad, and it was pretty damn close to watching Hanson and Brody versus Baba and Tenryu. You know, it was that kind of level of intensity, and certainly the crowd was so into it. It was just like the old days, basically. Anywho,
like the good old days.
Hey, anyway, yeah. So Kushida and Ospreay, a cracking match. Moving on. The Briscoe brothers take their first IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championship as Den Boys defeat Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tonga Raya, in 14 minutes and 2 seconds, which was a better match than the whole of the sum of its parts, I thought. I thought Gorillas of Destiny did incredibly well, and I think it was a damn shame they lost the tag team championships, because they've only had about 2 months to establish themselves as tag team champions, and it ain't long enough. That's no knock on the Briscoes, who I think are awesome. but it didn't sit right with me because it seems like we've got Paige and Takahashi use Bullet Club's new plaything, and therefore it's Gedo and Jedo's new plaything. And I don't think it was fair on Guerrillas of Destiny. I don't know what you think. Just a bit of a harsher criticism, but not the harshest criticism I have of this card. Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, but we'll look forward to that one. But yeah, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, but also it's kind of fallen into the trap of what they do with the junior heavyweight tag titles, where it's just bouncing them around. It's like you've got to keep them on someone for a little bit, like. But what I am glad is that the Briscoes are in that mix now. And Guerrillas of Destiny are obviously in there. It's like, you know, the new teams, new exciting teams in there, like, which is exactly what the junior heavyweight division needs. But yeah, so, I mean, what'll probably happen is next month, Guerrillas of Destiny will win them back. So,
I think Paige and Takahashi are likely to be next. Challenges, but we'll see.
What it is good for is that it feels fresh again, that division, when there wasn't really hardly any teams there for a while.
Yeah, and it's telling as well. There were two things that were telling about this match. One was the crowd were dead for it until Guerrillas of Destiny started to dominate. And when I think it was Roa power bombed Mark outside, or Jay Briscoe outside the ring, on the apron, then things started to pick up. They had to put a big move in to get the crowd back into it, and it worked out well. And the other thing is, Bullet Club, the club, the difference it 6 months makes compared to where they are now, compared to where they were 6 months ago, as far as presence and presentation is concerned. Yes, they are helping out AJ Styles in the main event at some of the biggest matches, but are they as good a tag team as they used to be? Chelsea, you're our regular WWE watcher. What do you think?
They're not being used very well right now. They're being used really well at house shows. You know, they come out with house shows with AJ, and they have matches that are only, you know, a house show match only has to matter in the context of that one particular show, and only sort of has to vaguely refer back to the source material that's on television. It doesn't have to carry a story that's going to eventually lead to something. So in that sense, they're doing really well. They get huge pops from fans. On TV, they clearly don't really know what to do with those guys. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but in New Japan Pro, the thing that made them really successful is that they were brutal killers, right? Like, they would just screw people up all the time. You can tell how hard I'm trying not to swear. So they haven't really let them do that. And part of it, I think, is that there's a little too much voltage in one place. Like, they have a lot of the big top star guys sort of circling around the club. And sometimes that can help distinguish you, but sometimes that can sort of drown out what makes you special. And I don't think that they've had a chance to show how good they really are yet. They've been in a couple of tag matches with, you know, you put those guys in a tag match with Enzo and Cass, who are homegrown WWE favorites. And the audience just isn't going to react to them as much because they can't. Like, they're not going to get as excited about those guys as they are about the guys who do the "how you doing" thing at the beginning of the segment. You know, I could see. You know, I mean, they're great wrestlers. They have a lot of potential. It's cool that they're working with AJ. I feel like if they want their relationship with AJ to really matter, they're going to have to turn AJ heel all the way, which they clearly don't want to do because they don't want to give up his merchandise sales. They want those guys, and they have them, and they don't really know what to do with them.
I mean, if it was me, I'd have just made them champions first night and just destroyed everyone. Just, like, killed them. And then it's come knock us off our perch, and there's your story for 12 months.
But then they clearly want New Day to get the record on the tag title reign. It's that thing where they've thought ahead and gone, oh, we want the record for them, but haven't. You know, they're not really thinking in the present kind of thing.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And this is kind of the problem. Kofi Kingston is going to retire someday, right? I mean, he's been with the company long enough that he has 10-year pay. I think he's actually been there over 10 years at this point. He's not going to be in New Day forever.
No.
And they owe him big for all the years that he was toiling at the bottom, even though he was incredible and always made his opponents look good and was always a team player. And New Day is the best thing he's ever had going for him that's lasted more than 2 months. So they're going to make sure he gets that record, because they're probably never going to let him be WWE heavyweight champion. You know, they're probably never, I mean, he should be. He should be at some point. He's more than earned it. He's definitely good enough. He could put on those matches. But because they're not going to give it to him, they'll probably make sure New Day breaks the record. And so the tag team division, even though they have all these really, really hot tag teams right now who are so good, is kind of stuck in this weird stasis place.
Well, we'll see. We will see. But just wanted to touch on that, just because it doesn't seem to me that they're getting any forward motion, having gone there with great high hopes. And
yeah,
I mean, change is as good as the rest. I'm sure they're happy doing what they're doing, and they would tell me different. But it doesn't, from the outside looking in, it doesn't look. But I don't watch it every week, so, you know, it's... Anywho, but yeah, Briscoe Brothers as new IWGP Tag Team Champions. They're going on to feud with the Young Bucks, bizarrely, in Ring of Honor at the moment, because they've only wrestled each other 42,000 times before, but... But that was actually my favorite promo ever is Jay Briscoe on the Young Bucks, which was, "Roses are red, violets are blue, the Young Bucks got long hair like a pretty girl do." Which I just thought was just genius. Anyway, I'm easily pleased. Then we moved on to the singles Never Overweight Championship, which was Katsuyori Shibata defeating Yuji Nagata in yet another fantastic age-defying performance from Yuji Nagata. 14 minutes and 53 seconds. This was cracking. Nagata, again, is really... how does he do this stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, that guy is evergreen. Like,
yeah, and it signaled the end of the Shibata third-generation feud, or as it's become known on Twitter as the New Japan Dads faction.
Oh, God!
So Shibata will move on to some pastures new, but he did check everybody's hands and they had a nice group hug after all the nasty things they said to each other for the last 6 months.
After kicking each other along as hard as they
and
possibly could.
I have to say, there are very few people who kicked each other harder than Nagata and Shibata in this match.
Oh my God. Like, sometimes, like, I love strong style, but you do go... Guys, come on. Like, it's a work. Like,
yes.
Come on.
See, yeah, that never happens to me when I watch men's strong style matches. It happens to me all the time when I watch Joshi.
Yeah. No, that's it. I'm watching Kari Hojo and Mika Satomura, the whole feud they had.
Oh, they just beat the crap out of each other.
Yeah. Like, you're watching them halfway match, and there's, like, blood drip. There's, like, red marks under eyes where kicks have gone slightly awry, and... You know, they aren't selling. They are actually that f***ed. Sorry.
You've seen the photo of Kairi holding up her championship with her eye mostly swollen shut?
Yeah. this one was wince-inducing, because Nagata can go still, remarkably. And he can go, but he's a guy who's held major championships in two different companies in the last 3 years, singles championships, and had those big main event matches that Japanese companies demand. And he's done it with aplomb. You know, and he's a guy who made his pay-per-view debut in 1994. Alex, would you like to say anything about Yuji Nagata?
Yuji Nagata is awesome. Sorry, I was eating something there.
Chelsea, would you like to say anything about Yuji Nagata?
I don't know that much about Yuji Nagata, but I can concur that he's awesome.
There you go.
And he's 48. Yeah, he's had a really impressively long career.
Did you notice as well at the end of this match? Oh God, what's his name? The New Japan commentator. There's a New Japan commentator who used to get beat up by Iizuki all the time, and Nagata would always come to his defense. I'm trying to remember his name. Oh, not going to be on here, is it? Yeah, there's a New Japan commentator who's always like, he was always defending Nagata, and Iizuki used to come up and kidnap him. One day he tied him to the ring post with handcuffs and spray painted a cat onto him.
Because of course.
You're a bigger fan of Nagata, you could be a blue cat. And
because why wouldn't you?
Yes. Because Iizuki was a crazy ass bastard. And when he lost the championship, the actual commentator was crying. Yeah, they turned the camera to him and he was actually crying proper tears. He was that upset. You know, it's like, that's so cool. You know, it's so cool. And, you know, the company, the guys that work for that company care so much about wrestling. It does make you smile. One thing that didn't make me smile was Michael Elgin versus Kenny Omega for the IWGP Intercontinental Championship in 7 weeks and 42 days that it took for this match to finish. Good God. Yeah, I didn't like this. Anyone else?
I feel like I liked it a bit more than you. We had a brief chat.
Brief chat.
And we were like, actually, let's save this for the podcast so we don't give it all away. But yeah, because I was looking up the ratings before from Big Dave Meltzer, and he's given it like 4.75 stars.
Oh, God.
It's like, what? Like, are we watching the same match? Like I thought it was all right. Like I said before, it wasn't even the best ladder match I've seen this year. Like probably the one at WrestleMania was better than this, and the Money in the Bank ladder match was better than this, if I'm being honest.
I reckon this was Kenny Omega had a match with the ladder for the Intercontinental Championship and lost. But that would be my assumption of this match. I just didn't like it. What do you think, Chelsea? I'll explain why in a second, because I'll let you guys get out your stuff out of the way, then I'll go on my big rant and explain why I thought it was so terrible. And then, yeah.
I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I didn't have strong feelings about it, honestly, which is unusual.
Which arguably is the worst thing that can happen to any wrestling match.
Probably. It was okay. I didn't think it was as good as the Money in the Bank ladder match, now that I'm comparing that to that specific example. On the other hand, it's really hard to put on a good ladder match. Whenever I see a ladder match that I feel really neutral about, I'm sort of like, okay, well, it's a ladder match. You know, the odds were against you to begin with.
But yeah. It felt like, to me, I kind of feel the same as you. I didn't love it or hate it, really. It was just there, and it was a bit too long. But it felt like they weren't building the drama in the usual way you would in a ladder match.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't much going for the belt and, you know, it's a bit played out, but it does do the trick of the slow climb up the ladder, you know, knock someone out the ring. Are they going to get back in time and stuff like that? It's tried and tested stuff that you have to remember, like New Japan, this was like the first ever ladder match.
I was scanning through my memories as far as gimmick matches are concerned, and as far as I can remember, it's only the third gimmick match they've had in forever. I think the other one was, there was a mass versus mass match at Fantastica Mania 2 years ago, and there was that day that Chono and Onita blew each other to hell in Sumo Hall.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was the last time.
Good times.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, basically, so what I mean is like, there's a lot of fans there who may not have seen this type of match. Like, why aren't you playing off those tropes? Like,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
These are tropes that are played out to us, but they would have added drama to the match, like for an audience that isn't used to a ladder match.
I'll explain why I don't like this match. And I don't particularly hate it. I mean, the kind of the mood is like, it's all levels are wrong for me. because I don't watch New Japan for this kind of match. As an international viewer who was like thinking of buying New Japan World, this would not draw me to watching New Japan World, because I watch New Japan for the storytelling and the match quality and the characters that are there. And secondly, to me, the other structural issue I have with this is gimmick matches are there to end a feud. They've got to be there for a specific reason. There has to be a story to get you to that gimmick match. You know, as much as I despise the Hardy Brothers knocking 7 bells of hell out of one another for no apparent reason on TNA, at least they have a sense of, there's a sense of story there. They've gone, this match didn't settle it, so we've gone to this match. Whereas this is just, it's a ladder match, and there was no reason for this ladder match to exist except for the fact Kenny Omega challenged Tanahashi originally for the ladder match. Tanahashi got injured, he couldn't perform in the ladder match, so Elgin gets the title shot. And I've got no problem with Michael Elgin at all, because I think Michael Elgin's pretty cool for a big guy. He's got over very quickly and very effectively to an audience that didn't necessarily understand him or the way he wrestles. I think he's done a cracking job.
But it seems like they really like him.
Yeah.
The audience seems like they're behind him.
But if I was picking one person to be in a ladder match, Elgin wouldn't make the top 150 because his basic gimmick is no one can move him. So so that kind of kills half the fun for a start. And like, there's no reason for this match to exist because Omega wasn't in a long feud with Elgin to get us to this point. Elgin was supposed to be stuck in a feud with Bad Luck Fale, I think, wasn't he? So, you know, it kind of like, it's just all levels of wrong. And then the other thing which I didn't like about it is one of the things that draws me to New Japan is it's not shot to the match. The match happens and they shoot it. Okay? Does that make sense? Which is,
I think I follow, yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, in some cases it's bad because like there was a couple of spots on this entire pay-per-view where they missed big spots. But right. I'd rather have that than WWE, TNA, every spot work to the hard cam because that's the way it's got to be, which makes every match predictable and was the reason why I don't like watching WWE. And I'll watch TNA because I want to watch something mainstream that's narratively, you know, driven. So because I'm a wrestling journalist, I need to know about this stuff. this is the reason why I don't watch those. I don't particularly enjoy watching those particular programs. Or, you know, I do enjoy watching TNA. That's harsh. But, you know, there are drawbacks I find about watching that particular style of television products, which is the reason why I like watching New Japan. And I'd argue as well, there's all sorts of things. I like the spits I liked. I like the bits Red Shoes Ono going underneath the ring to tell the Young Bucks to go away.
Yeah, that
I like
great.
That.
Yeah.
You know, those are cool spots and little bits, but it just took so long and the spots were very contrived and it's like, why are you going for a smaller ladder when you're clearly only using it for a spot? Why don't you just go for the big ladder because that's the obvious thing to do? And the same, again, the drama's points that weren't there that should have been there for the nuts and bolts of the match. I think that ends my rant.
But yeah... Yeah, pretty spot on, I think.
Those are good points. Yeah, those are good points.
It's just, yeah, I can't fathom why it's got such a high rating.
I think the other thing is, as well, and this is... I'm going to sound like Jim Cornette, so I'll warn you now.
I'm bracing myself.
Certain wrestling minds work better with a filter, and this was Kenny Omega unfiltered. And I don't necessarily think that that's a good thing.
I agree. I think Kenny needs reining in sometimes.
Yeah, I agree on that. There was some moments last year when Guns and Gallows had the same effect and Gato and Jody just went, you'll be all right, you guys sort it yourselves, and it was terrible. Especially
we spoke about that.
Yeah, the feud with the Kingdom wasn't great. It was bad. And this is the same thing happening again. And 9 times out of 10, Kenny Omega's bang on. But this one was just not there for me.
Everybody has off nights.
Yeah, and it just didn't click at all.
Yeah. I mean, like I say, it wasn't a dire match by any means, but it was, it was a disappointment.
Yeah, and then moving on to the main event, we have Kazuchika Okada and Tetsuya Naito in an absolute corker for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Clearly, Okada was the fan favorite and Naito was the heel, which is the way it should be, really.
Very different dynamic to,
definitely to the
last time they wrestled.
Yeah, and... so many layers to this match, as usual with an Okada match, and 4 rainmakers to put away Naito, but he got the job done.
And we'll talk about the result in a minute, but the rainmaker thing, first guy other than Tanahashi to kick out of it clean, which shows
how
much they want Naito to be a star. Like, even though I don't necessarily agree with the result.
You would like to Naito to have stuck with it a bit longer?
I would. I would have liked Naito to hold it till Wrestle Kingdom, to be perfectly honest. And have... I think the thrill was in the chase with Okada, probably.
Yeah, possibly.
We've spoken before, he doesn't necessarily need the title. He is the biggest star there now. Yeah, it just feels like there's so much fun stuff they can be doing with Naito. It felt fresh. It felt different. Like, he's been hilarious, like, in the press conferences and stuff when he came in and, like, threw the belt out the way on the table and, like, put his merchandise down instead in a more prominent place.
What a jerk. What a jerk.
And, like, Okada's there perfect in his perfect suit and Naito's just coming in his baseball cap and stuff like that. It's like, it's just the most, like, how can we wind up everyone with, like, you know, the traditions? But yeah, it just feels like Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you guys think. It feels like a bit of a why. Like the match was great.
I think the why is going to be G1 Climax. I think that's the why.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm assuming. Yeah. It's got to be the favorite now.
Yeah, I think the story or else otherwise Okada wouldn't have said at the end of the show, no one has gone through the G1 Climax and been IWGP Heavyweight Champion at the end.
Mm.
So I think that's the story because they needed a new story with Nakamura going. We assumed the story for this year would be Nakamura's run to the championship, then challenge Okada for the IWGP Championship, Chaos on Chaos, the Forbidden Championship match.
Mm. But yeah, felt that was what they were booking. So we said that after last year's G1 with Nakamura having lost two finals on the bounce.
So we needed a new story. Chelsea, what did you think of this particular main event?
Man, it's still kind of a shock to me when I watch New Japan Pro, like, just how long they will let that, like, slow burn build go before they get to the end of a big match like this. Like, that I'm still, because, again, I watch WWE most of the time. I'm not used to it. So, it pushed a lot of buttons for me. It was great. I really love the way those two wrestle each other. I mean, they're both so great individually, but the chemistry that they have, the two of them, is so interesting. And in a way, it almost reminded me of some of the great, like, classic matches I've watched from, I want to say, from, like, the 80s. How do I explain? I feel like a lot of times the thing that some of the younger wrestlers emphasize, maybe this is just in WWE, is like work rate, like how many moves you can do in a short period of time. And Okada and Naito don't really seem like they care about that. They're trying to tell you a story. They care about that more than whether or not they show off their work rate, you know? And they never lose sight of that. Like, they both have this ironclad grip on the story that's being told and on their characters that they're portraying. And it was really, really amazing. And you can tell they respect each other too. Like, I always really appreciate that when I see it in matches where there's like a great feud like this. I really enjoyed it.
Like, it's when you have established your moveset, this is the best part about New Japan. Once you've established which are the dangerous moves, which are the big moves, they can start to have fun with how they counter them and how they try and avoid certain things. And this was a great example of that, of like, you know, Naito goes for the Destino, so and Okada tries to counter it into the Tombstone, stuff like that. It's like, that's the stuff that hooks you in as a fan.
I'm right. Naito didn't get Gloria on, did he? So therefore, we don't know if Okada can withstand it. So there's another story. So, you know, if Naito's finisher didn't land, was a card lucky? You know,
they've still got cards left to play.
Yeah, that's it. Mm. So you know, the level in the finishing is so important to New Japan matches and Japanese matches generally. You know, it's okay. You know, there's always the thing stuck up your sleeve, and it really goes against the grain of what used to happen in the 90s, where people used to kick out of killer finishes all the time because they would like. Then they'd have to have super show finishes and pay-per-view finishes. And got to the point to being ridiculous.
It's an issue, like I've mentioned a bunch of times, with the WWE style, where it's like, you know, nowadays, like, for instance, John Cena hits the AA. Everyone knows it's not going to end with the first one. Whereas, like, when Okada hits the like this, Naito kicking out the Rainmaker is massive because it's so well protected. Because normally when he hits that,
That's it.
You know that's it.
Yeah, and it was just like four Rainmakers is something really, really special, you know. And proves.
Plus, that felt like it was like teaching Naito a lesson. As well.
Man, and the level of effort they both put into it. I mean, they were both like shattered at the end of that. And those are not guys who, I mean, both of those guys can go. Those are not guys who usually finish matches like panting and sweaty and exhausted like that.
Mm-hmm. Here's, just you mentioned the 80s, here's an analogy for you. This is, right, I put Naito versus Okada is the same as Steamboat versus Flair, but Steamboat's the one that went partying all, sorry, Naito is Steamboat, but Steamboat went partying all night and Flair went home to the gym.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
If
you imagine what Steamboat would be like if he got completely jaded about Flair being the star.
Being the man.
That's where I put it. And to be fair, Ricky did get jaded about Flair being the man and left JCP for the WWE. So there you go. But he just didn't do it in a feud. And maybe that would have been the best way to go. I don't know. But Ricky Steamboat was the best pure babyface of all time. So maybe I'm, just an idea.
Just nitpicking.
But it's just a nice analogy for historical references. So we have the G1's Climax tournament, which is basically going to occupy pro wrestling fans' lives for the next 2 months. In Japan anyway, and quite a lot of Europe and
North America. Most wonderful time of the year, G1 time.
Most wonderful time. It's like Christmas for pro wrestling fans.
It's like Christmas, but with guys kicking the crap out of each other.
Yes, which is obviously better than Christmas. So
but I don't know. Maybe that is what Christmas is like for some people.
This is true. That's kind of a sad moment there.
Yeah. Sorry, that got dark really quick.
Man, that escalated quickly. Yes. So the G1 Climax has been announced. Block A is Bad Luck Fale, Hiroki Goto, Tomohiro Ishii, Satoshi Kojima, Togi Makabe, Naomichi Marufuji from Pro Wrestling Noah, Kazuchi Okada, the Rainmaker himself, Seiya Sanada, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Tama Tonga. Block B is Michael Elgin, Evil, Tomiki Honma, Tetsuya Naito, Katsushika Nakajima from Pro Wrestling Noah, Yuji Nagata, Kenny Omegas, Katsuryu Shibata, Tori Yano, who's coming back from Noah, and Yoshihashi. So you've got some Chaos on Chaos stuff in there. You've got some Bullet Club and Bullet Club stuff in there. Should be an interesting tournament. By the way, if you want to know more about the history of the G1 Climax tournament, last year, me and Alex, you can go back to WrestlePlus.com and you can go back and listen to our history of the G1 Climax and find out all about how we got to this place some 40-odd years ago when Antonio Inoki said, I've got an idea. So,
good plug.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm getting good at this now. Block A. There's some interesting matchups there. Marufuji versus Ishii. I like that. Versus Okada. Oh, that's going to be lovely.
Yeah. Okada and Tanahashi again. It's gonna be interesting. Not sure what they can do that they haven't done already, but I know that they will have another classic because they always do.
Goto and Ishii, Chaos on Chaos Bruisers. That should be interesting.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Anything stick out to you there, Chelsea, that you'd like to see?
I mean, honestly, it's all still pretty new to me, but I'm definitely gonna watch it. I'm excited about it.
That's cool. Okay.
Wasn't a match in particular, but I mean, like, I watch a New Japan Pro special and I'm like, oh, I want to watch the next one. I want to see what's going to happen.
Excellent. That's cool. Well,
this G1's always just great. It's the past few years have all been immense.
It's 2 weeks of pro wrestling where you'd be hard pressed not to find something you like.
There's usually about 10 classics at least.
That's
the standard they've set for themselves.
Block B will prove to show up some classics when you've got Kenny Omega versus Tetsuya Naito. That should be interesting.
Yes.
And we'll actually probably say an awful lot more about the future product of New Japan Pro Wrestling than any of the matches in this tournament, I would think.
Yes, well, I was going to say, if it goes the way it did last year, the last two nights, the matches are Okada Tanahashi on the last night for Block A. The last night for Block B is Omega against Naito. So the implication seems to be that they're going to be if they do what they do last year, you know what I mean? Yeah. Where it came down to, was it AJ Tanahashi on one side and Okada Nakamura on the other side, where it was basically the winner of that match was going to win the block.
Yeah.
So that seems to be the implication that those are the four guys. A, they're the four guys they want on top. And they're the four guys who are going to have the best tournaments, seems to be the implication.
Omega versus Naito. Has that happened before?
Omega versus Naito. No, I don't think it. In the junior heavyweight days, maybe in a best of super juniors a few years ago, maybe did.
Because
that
not.
Sounds really cool.
That should be decent, I think.
That sounds really cool. That sounds like they're gonna pull out all of the great heel moves, to make you boo and cheer at the same time.
I want to see Kenny Omega versus Toru Yano.
And you will see it.
And I want to see it. And I want to see Yano win with the 6-3-4 as well. Because anyone who has a finishing maneuver, which is a double-handed low blow, and gets a name for it, is a wrestling genius.
That's true. It's usually just, oh, okay, you roll your eyes.
Yeah, but no, Toru Yano is that good at being a comedy heel. He's just amazing, and I love the guy. And I've slowly gained more and more respect for him as the year goes by, because who works the least in New Japan Pro Wrestling is Toru Yano, but he earns just as much money as everybody else. Yeah. And all his matches last 7 minutes, and he barely does a thing. And surely that's a level of genius that few people on that roster have managed to attain.
It'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see Omega and Yano just because of the dynamic. Like, they kind of did it with Yano and AJ last year, where it was like AJ getting annoyed that someone was cheating against him. Like, I imagine they'll just amp that up to 11 with Omega involved.
Yeah, it should be interesting, certainly. So that's the G1 Climax Tournament, which we will cover on this show. If I had the time, I would do a daily podcast on the G1 Climax Tournament. I'm sure Alex and Chelsea would join me. I think we should do it like the tennis.
If it was physically possible for me to watch that much professional wrestling.
We do also have jobs as well.
Yeah, if someone wants to pay us good money, like enough so that we can quit our jobs to do this.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
And we will cover the G1 Climax Tournament for you, and we will do it. It'd be like BBC at Wimbledon. Every night we would present something for you.
Do a roundup, yeah.
Do a roundup of the best matches and what happened, and
I'll even wear a ridiculous '90s power suit with like the pads in the shoulders, like all the commentators used to do.
Well, like Aja Kong at a press conference. There you go.
Yes.
Yeah. Without the face paint.
Well,
oh, come on! No, you're gonna do that. You got to do it all the way.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll all do.
You're gonna get
Joshy
like
face paint.
You're gonna get like a blonde mohawk as well.
Well, you know, we'll see. See, let's set this up, and then I might dress up as Bull Nakano. You don't know.
There you go. So, okay, there you go. There's the full package. If you pay us, we will quit our jobs, cover the G1 Climax Tournament for you on television whilst dressed as the roster of AJW in 1993.
We'll grotesquely humiliate ourselves.
Can't say fairer than that, really.
Fair enough. I don't know who to pick. I think Paul Nakano. Yeah, Yamada, because she didn't wear anything that ridiculous. But I have to cut my hair. Anyway, there you go.
discussion for another time, that one.
For many other times. Maybe we should talk about this later, guys. Anyway, I'd like to thank my guest, Chelsea Spollen of Shoulders Up, at ShouldersUp_net, and Chelsea at Chelsea Comics on Twitter.
I'm sorry to correct you. It's actually shouldersup.net. And on Twitter, it's shoulders_up.
That's what I meant. That's okay. That's fine. We've had a long chat.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. You're welcome anytime, Chelsea. And from UniLad, Mr. Alex Watt. And I'm not even going to try and remember your Twitter handle. Alex Watt.
It's
187.
Go on. Alex Watt 187.
Day, yeah.
God,
you got it right.
God, if he got that wrong after that, that would have been embarrassing.
Thank you very much for listening to our New Japan Roundup. Next week's guest is the return of Mr. Ben Spindler to WrestleTalk TV. He's going to come and talk to me about everything in pro wrestling. So you've got that to look forward to next week, and I'm going to record that in literally 15 minutes. So this is the most ahead trail as you possibly could imagine. Thank you very much for listening to the True Penny Show this week. Enjoy all the other shows on WrestleTalk, the WrestleTalk Podcast Network, and subscribe to WrestlePlus for $4.99 a month. You get cool wrestling and wrestling observation like this every day, and the entire archive of everything we've ever done for WrestleTalk TV. So thank you very much for listening. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye.